Good morning. It's been one hell of a week, and it's not over yet. Not by a long shot.
This is the calm before the storm, before the surge. And when it comes, and it will come, never will so many ask so much of so few.
Taoiseach Leo Varadkar from his address to the nation on St. Patrick's Night, something I suspect few of us will ever forget. That was Tuesday, and by Thursday night, we were surging, with people testing positive for COVID-19 increasing by over 50% in one day. Here's George Lee from yesterday's news bulletin at 7 a.m.
The 191 new cases of COVID-19 infection confirmed here yesterday was higher than expected. But it was not out of kilter with the 30-40% daily growth in confirmed cases typically expected at this early stage of a pandemic. The Chief Medical Officer at the Department of Health, Dr. Tony Houlihan, noted that since the virus takes up to 2 weeks to incubate in the human body, it will likely be 2 to 3 more weeks before the social distancing, school closures and other measures begin to be reflected in a slower rate of increase. With a total of 557 cases, Ireland now has more than twice as many confirmed COVID-19 infections per million of population than either the UK or the US. However, this is understood to be a reflection of a proportionately far higher level of testing here, something the World Health Organization says is critically important for slowing the spread of the virus. The median age of confirmed cases in Ireland is 43 years. Dr. Houlihan said that this underscores the importance and the need for younger people to rigorously follow public health advice and social distancing measures.
Right then, so not entirely unexpected, but a little bit scary at the same time. On Monday, WHO Director Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus again stressed the importance of containing this virus through testing.
You cannot fight a fire blindfolded. And we cannot stop this pandemic if we don't know who is infected. We have a simple message for all countries. Test, test, test. Test every suspected case.
Ooh, and lest you be in any doubt as to just how fast this virus can spread, Philip Boucher-Hayes crunched the numbers with Dr. Kim Roberts, a virologist in Trinity College, on Monday's Drive Time.
On average, everybody infects about 2.5 people. So if you are infected with the virus and you carry on as normal, you are likely to infect, on average, 2.5 people.
And if you multiply that 2.5 people by the rate of transmission over the course of a month,
then one person can contribute to the infection of 244 people in 1 month.
Sweet mother of the divine, they are some sobering figures. So as we all know, stay put, social distancing and scrub those paws. But should you need it, what does this brave new world of testing look like? Well, on St. Patrick's Day, it was announced that Croke Park would become a drive-through test centre. One of the first to make their way onto the pitch was writer Stephanie Preisner, who spoke to Drive Time. She had had a cough and, on the advice of her GP, headed to Croker.
We're kind of the guinea pig, so I was the first round of people in.
OK, and what was the process from there, Stephanie?
Sorry, one second.
Is that your dog?
No, that's my cough.
Apologies. I thought it was that was your cough as opposed to
the
dog barking.
I think that's what they describe a barking cough as. So you arrive, and because it's GP referral only, you cannot just drive up. So the first kind of barrier is a person who asks you through a window, can they have your name? And then you're ticked off kind of a guest list.
Okay.
And then you proceed car by car through the gate into a car park where you're held almost as if you're about to drive onto a ferry. So it's one car behind the other, and then there's three rows of that. A man comes or a woman comes to the window and you roll down the window just a tiny bit.
Okay, is that woman masked and gowned?
Yes.
Okay.
So at that point, they're not gowned. No, at that point, it's just a mask. And they hand you in one of the surgical masks through your window and an A4 page, which I put on Twitter, that gives instructions as to what what's going to happen. So it says, testing centre patient instruction, please turn off your engine, put on your handbrake, put on your face mask and leave it on, roll up your window. When called, drive slowly to the bay that you are directed to and turn off your engine. When asked, roll down your window. You will have a swab of your nose and throat. When the swab is completed, do not drive off until you are directed to. No photography. You then all proceed in a row, in a convoy, to into Croke Park, into kind of, I imagine, where the buses of the players would go to. So it's indoors. It looks kind of like a car park, but it does very much feel like you're driving onto a ferry. Mm. And then on the right-hand side, there are eight bays. And in each of the bays, there are two medical staff who are wearing full gowns, full hat, full mask and surgical gloves. It's a little bit intimidating, which is why I decided that I would tell people what it is like. And because there's no photography, we might not see the inside of this on television. And so just wanted people not to be afraid of what's happening. People are very calm and there's so much staff telling you what to do.
Stephanie Preisner with Mary Wilson on Tuesday. The following day, Sean O'Rourke spoke to Dr. Oisin O'Connell, a respiratory consultant. He had set up a WhatsApp group for medical and other scientific experts who were sharing information on the virus since January. And for him, speed and decisiveness were key.
This is essentially wartime medicine and decisions need to be made quickly. The WHO said perfection is the enemy of the good in this situation, and I fully agree with that sentiment. We need to empower administrators in all sectors to recognise that speed is of the essence, that regular decision-making pathways and regular committee decisions are not what we need in the country at the moment. Speed is going to be of the essence. We are going to be practising in situations which we are not used to practising. Part of the kind of experience that we're getting out, even out of the WhatsApp group, is some of my intensive care colleagues have been showing videos of how you can change one ventilator so that it can actually ventilate two or more people. We would never even have contemplated that a month ago, and that certainly would not be regarded as best practice. But if you are in an emergency wartime situation, that is what you do. Decisions are made for the greater good in these kind of situations. So we have to empower people to recognise the gravity of what's going to come upon us and the speed at which it's going to hit our healthcare service.
Respiratory consultant Dr. Oisin O'Connell with Sean on Wednesday. And on Thursday, Minister for Health Simon Harris joined Sean, and again, the emphasis was on testing.
What about the level of testing, Minister? The expectation is you will get it up to about, 15,000 tests per day. When do you think that will be happening?
It's impossible to exactly predict, but in the next few days. I mean, we're gone from a situation whereby, if you think about it, about 2 weeks ago, the published figures showed we had tested 347 people in Ireland for COVID-19. We then saw 1,700 people being tested last week, and we saw a figure of 6,600 in recent days. I was out in the National Viral Reference Laboratory with the Taoiseach yesterday, and what they're basically telling us now is the demand from GPs for tests is very high, and they think they'll be testing between 10 and 15,000 people on a daily basis. I'm really proud that we're continuing to do community testing. Some countries have stopped it. And it is going to mean that, yes, people in Ireland are going to have to wait a few days for a test, absolutely. But why we're doing this, I suppose, and why I want the listeners to know we're doing this is the World Health Organization said to test, test, test. The more of this virus you can find, isolate and contact anyone who might have been in contact with it, the greater a chance you have of slowing down the spread. And if we can slow down the spread of this virus, we will save lives.
Yes, but if you're having 15,000 tests per day, and if the Taoiseach is correct in his expectation the other night on the State of the Nation address, so to speak, that there would be 15,000 cases by the end of March, that's what, just less 11 days away now. Are you going to be able to keep pace with the numbers, for instance, where contact tracing is concerned? Will there be much point in continuing to do contact tracing?
So we will reach a point, every country will reach a point where you'll say you have to slow down community testing. But we're nowhere near there, and we want to keep going for as long as possible. So the Chief Medical Officer tells me absolutely clearly, every single day you can community test and contact trace is a good day.
Minister for Health Simon Harris on Thursday. But what about our nearest neighbour, the UK, because the virus isn't about to stop at the border to get its papers checked? Well, there's a bit of schmuck on the situation now, but the start of the week saw a slightly individual, dare I say, rogue approach to containing the virus. Specifically, notions of herd immunity and isolation of vulnerable populations, primarily older people. On Monday, Dr. Gabriel Scally spoke to Sarah McInerney.
They're saying they're relying on the best scientific advice, that they have their own experts and they're great experts.
Well, it's that, you know, it's that old line about the soldiers, you know, everyone is out of step except our Johnny. They are not, if the UK has got it right, the rest of the world has got it wrong. And I don't think that's likely. And I think it's displayed by some of their appalling science that they're talking about herd immunity and using herd immunity. And I don't believe it at all. They are reliant on mathematical modelling. This is not a mathematical modelling issue. This is an issue about how people conduct their lives and how we as societies conduct our lives over this really difficult period. And the view from WHO is quite clear. You must take a comprehensive approach. It's not testing alone, not contact tracing alone, not quarantine alone, not social distancing alone. Do it all. It's all of this. We mustn't let this fire burn.
I saw Anthony Costello, who's a former director of the WHO, saying that he thinks the UK policy is going to accelerate the epidemic, never mind slow it down. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely agree with that. In fact, that seems to be their policy, to let it rip. And if there's one threat to how things are being handled in the south of Ireland, it is the UK position.
However, as the week progressed, nay, as the days progressed, the mood music from Downing Street changed, as did the strategy. Here's Enda Brady of Sky News with Sean on Thursday.
A lot of suggestions in the media, broadcast and print, that London could be facing lockdown because the cases are more prevalent there.
Yes, so this is the big worry for the government here, for the National Health Service. The majority of fatalities have happened in London. The disease, the virus, does seem to be spreading far more quickly in the capital. And I guess this was to be absolutely expected. I mean, you know, we're looking at the trajectory in Italy and France, and the feeling is that the UK is a couple of weeks behind those countries. So 32 people here lost their lives yesterday to COVID-19. And today, the government has taken some pretty stringent measures. 40 tube stations are now shut. So London Underground in partial lockdown, and I think we're edging closer to a situation where the advice will be changing and more people will be staying at home. But London's half empty today.
And by Thursday evening, Boris Johnson and Leo Varadkar had picked up the phone, spoken and agreed to align their strategies. Progress, thankfully. You'd almost miss Brexit. Actually, no, sorry. You'll never miss Brexit. However, a lockdown has meant unemployment, depleted bank balances and a lot of worry for people who just don't know where their next paycheck is coming from. This is Barry Lenehan way, way back on Monday's Drive Time.
70,000 restaurant workers, 50,000 pub and bar staff, 20,000 creche and childcare workers all dealing with that new sudden reality and perhaps more losses again today. A letter sent by Retail Excellence to its 2,000 members saying it's been a very challenging day today for everyone. There have been lots of store closures with streets deserted, but adding commerce will bounce back, whilst also saying shops will have to reconfigure as well to help stem the spread of this virus.
And as the week went on, the Minister for Social Protection, Regina Doherty, acknowledged that as many as 400,000 people could lose their jobs here as a result of the COVID-19 outbreak. Danny McCoy of the employers' body IBEC spoke to Audrey Carville on Wednesday's Morning Ireland.
What is the worst case scenario in your mind in terms of job losses? Because there's already at least 140,000 over the last few days.
Well, it's very hard to speculate on that, but it's a bit like the health crisis itself. We now have a simultaneous economic crisis, but the economic crisis is potentially temporary. And the question then is that we don't make the policy mistakes in terms of trying to treat it. Patrick Honan this morning makes a very good point about making sure that the governments around the world in their role provide that kind of temporary cover and do whatever it takes. This is actually a demand shock, but it's a demand shock that we know what's coming from. So, for instance, if the pubs were to open again, the demand is there. It's not as if the demand has gone away. it's rationed at the moment. So we need to put it in perspective. We need to protect the incomes of those who are losing their jobs. We need to protect the businesses that they can reopen. So it requires a community effort, but it also requires that the government stands ready to provide adequate cash and liquidity into the system.
Now, banks and other institutions have put in place measures to help people, but we're in a whole new economic world. And as a euphemism, challenging doesn't even begin to cover it. Back to Danny McCoy, he is again looking to the state for support.
The state has a relationship with all of us. So the revenue commissioners are a very important piece of this. It may be that the employers have to pay the employees, but then there also needs to be that guarantee that the state, through the welfare system, or however we work it, will recompense those businesses so that they can actually open up again, re-employ people. So this is really the scale of the package, I think, will be the next conversation. Right now we're seeing some fairly big, as they call them, bazookas, the $1 trillion in the US, the $350 billion in the UK. We probably need something as a similar scale, but these are actually loans to business. The impact for the public finances will only be the case where they don't get repaid back. So it's in all our interest that everybody's able to trade through this ultimately.
IBEX Danny McCoy on Wednesday's Morning Ireland. However, in order to trade and function, you need to be open. And yesterday, Sean O'Rourke spoke to Kingston Mills, Professor of Experimental Immunology at Trinity College, about the Irish version of lockdown.
There was a Chinese Red Cross delegation in Italy, and there were quite critical yesterday of the Italian version of lockdown compared to China. Now, we here in Ireland, we're not even close to the Italian version. So do we need to intensify our own lockdown measures?
I think we do. I understand that some restaurants are still operating and some of them have moved to takeaway only. But I think all restaurants, sit-down restaurants, should now be asked to shut up doors. I also looked this morning on the website of the Dublin Airport arrivals and departures, and I was shocked, I have to say, to read that there were flights flying out to Malaga, Lanzarote, Seville, Barcelona. Why do people feel they still need to fly to these destinations? These are largely holiday destinations, and why have we not stopped all flights to that are non-essential?
So more lockdown Chinese style than Italian, it seems, but there is light at the end of the tunnel, honest, because it does work. Here's Mark Murray from China talking to Sean only yesterday.
All lockdown restrictions have been lifted in the city now.
And have people been flooding onto the streets as a result?
Yeah, I see a lot of people like throwing away the face masks. That was a big nuisance for everybody during this time. About a week and a half ago, we got our last case of the coronavirus. So no more cases anymore. And then it took about a week and a half just to be sure before they lifted all restrictions. It's a completely different culture, you know, where at other times you would see it as a bit of oppression where they don't ask questions, they just do as they're told. But when it comes to a state of emergency, it's really what works.
Right then, and lest we're in any doubt as to how to behave, earlier, Morning Ireland played this clip from Prime Time of Dr. Catherine Motherway, who is not soft-soaping it.
This is a virus. We know it's near us. We know it's in every county in Ireland. We know that if we don't control the surge, we will have a major problem coping. But ideally, you don't need to get to see me. You need not to get this disease, and you need to do that by keeping away from other people. 2 metres away, stay in your own home, wash your hands. Prevention in this instance is the best cure, and that is what the people of China have taught us, and that's what people in South Korea have taught us, that's what Singapore has taught us. Once you come to the ICU, 1 in 5 patients in my intensive care unit lose their lives. And I don't know the death rate from this disease yet because it is new. You don't need to get on a ventilator with this, you need not to get it. You need to make sure, if you're young, that you don't give it to your parents or your grandparents. That is really important. And the only way to do that is to actually, for the entire community, to actually really think about this, keep away from each other. Essentially, we must treat each other like pariahs. That's what we have to do, all of us. It's a real change for us, but we need to do that to prevent what has happened in Italy happening here.
Right then, scrub up and sit in. We're on it. Back in a bit. Welcome back. What a St. Patrick's Day it was. No shivering in windcheaters as the parade passed. No baton twirling majorettes. No local amdram floats poking fun at government formation. Sigh. And near a fire engine or Massey Ferguson on the streets. And I won't even mention the pubs. But some things remain eternal. And Marty Morrissey and crew brought us these reflections on what it means to be Irish.
You know you're Irish when you say goodbye to somebody about 12 times on the phone before you hang up.
When you're at your granny's and she doesn't let you leave without giving you something to eat, even if you're not hungry.
When you give directions based on pubs, so there's a pub at the end of this road and 20 metres after that there's another pub and so on.
You know you're Irish when you're backbiting your neighbour.
When you get served a pint of Guinness and it's not right, the head's all wrong.
You know you're Irish man, you're buttering your spuds every day of the week.
You know when someone mistakes you for English when you're abroad and then they're like, are you from England? And you're like, no, Ireland. And they're like, oh, Jesus, that's great. You're like, ah, yeah, I'm delighted with myself.
You know you're Irish when you're looking for something on tick. See you later.
The sun remotely shining through the clouds, you're out there in your underwear and your bras and you're getting a bit of tan on, you think you're in Spain.
When you stay at home and avoid town, Dublin city centre, like the plague on Paddy's Day, which is funny because now it's actually kind of happening quite similar to that. And I want to go into town this year because it's going to be empty and interesting. But yeah, you know you're Irish when you avoid town like the plague on Paddy's Day.
Oh, lads, even in a light-hearted vox pop, there's no getting away from this thing. That was Marty Morrissey on Tuesday. It'll be some parade next year, I tell you. And maybe a pint in the pub. Not for a while, though. However, at the beginning of the week, well, we weren't all there yet. Here are two stories about how spreading the virus might have repercussions we just didn't think about, and also maybe the invincibility and possibly the arrogance of youth. Brian O'Connell spoke to some young people in pubs on Saturday night. Yes, Saturday night.
Had you second thoughts coming out tonight?
Yeah, my parents weren't happy with me coming out, but I'm not staying in for the 2 weeks at all. I'm not bothered sitting on my arse.
I couldn't agree more, yeah. So I want to get out of the house. Yeah. Stranded inside all week.
Pubs would be a place where I would spread a lot, but I don't think much will stop people from drinking, like, especially on Paddy's Day now, especially that coming up.
So if the pubs are closed, you're likely to drink in a house party somewhere?
Yeah,
realistically. And the chances are of there being social distancing there?
Not very much now. I don't know. With a few cans in you, nothing will keep you away from anyone. Yeah. From the state of Italy and Spain shutting down everything, seems like it's getting a lot more serious. Like,
yeah, town is so weird. Everyone, the whole place empty and all.
Although a few of the bars, I mean, a couple of stag parties earlier, a few of the bars seem to be kind of hopping, yeah.
That's strange. I didn't see any of that.
Have you brought hand sanitizer with you? Are you wearing disposable gloves? Or are you doing anything differently than you would have last Saturday night?
Not really, no. There's just less of us. Not as many boys allowed out. Parents saying they have to stay in and all that.
So how come you defied your parents?
I'm not staying in for the 2 weeks at all. I couldn't do that.
Of course, it's all changed now. That was Brian O'Connell on the Sean O'Rourke Show on Monday. And that same day, Ryan Tuberty spoke to Young Offenders actor Jennifer Barry. She'd gone to a house party in Cork on Thursday night.
Had you heard the news or watched the news? Were you up to speed or were you kind of ignoring it a bit?
I suppose, you know, when something like this happens, you try to ignore it because you just don't want it to seem real.
Yeah, fair point.
At the same time, then I thought, you know, there were so few cases on Thursday, and I got just jumped crazily. But at the time, there wasn't that many cases, and I didn't think that anyone I would know would have it. So I just, I more or less ignored it.
Okay, and obviously the domino effect I was talking about earlier on. If you got it, good for you because you'll survive it. But is there anyone in your house, for example, that might be a little bit more threatened by it than you, as a healthy young woman?
My entire family.
Yes, her entire family had some issues, be it a heart condition or simply by virtue of being older and somewhat physically vulnerable. And Jennifer's guilt was palpable.
My stupidity has and still is now, because it takes 14 days for the symptoms to come through. And, you know, if I have it, it's already been passed on to them now. So, yeah, every day now is kind of a small bit of, I'm living in fear a small bit for my family now because of something I stupidly did.
Yeah. I just think you and so many others did that on Thursday night. You just thought, like, party time, you know.
It's just such, you know, we should be allowed to have fun, but I think now people need to realise that, would you rather be bored or would you rather someone you love die?
Oh no, that was Jennifer Barry with Ryan on Monday, a cautionary tale. Social distancing, order of the day today, but you can still socialise, chat on the web or on your phone. In the 1980s, not so much. Unless, of course, you were familiar with the dark art of tapping. On the History Show, Julian Clancy talked to artist Una Seely, and she lived in Temple Bar in the era of snow-wash denim. Good times.
Everybody lived in really grotty flats, you know, where you just have a room with the phone down in the hall, and you didn't have to pay for any of your phone calls because you just tapped the number. You're too young to know about tapping.
Tapping was some kind of crazy oversight on public phones in Ireland, where you could actually tap out a number by pressing the receiver button and make free calls. It's how an entire generation stayed in contact with their friends.
Because back in those days, like, it would cost you sort of 60 quid to talk to America, if you had a friend in America, to talk for 20 minutes. So there were ways around these things. And if there's a way, a Dubliner will find it.
And Una painted this picture of Temple Bar way back when.
It was scruffy, it was anarchic, it was broke, everybody was on the dole. You know, there was loads of like shebeens, you know, illegal late night drinking places. It was very grim, but it was also really good fun.
The 80s in Dublin and Ireland were also a bad time to be an artist too.
I think at that time there was 12 artists in Ireland who were actually making a living out of their art.
At the same time, the one saving grace was the cheap rents. Most of the buildings in the city centre were earmarked for demolition, including at one stage the whole of Temple Bar. CIE were actually going to replace all of it with a brand new bus depot.
Can you imagine? I mean, that was Ireland at the time though, wasn't it? Like, you know, they were busy knocking down everything.
Una Seely on the History Show on Sunday. And sure, of course, there's tumbleweed blowing through Temple Bar right now, I can tell you. But anyway. On Thursday evening, the Dáil passed emergency legislation giving them powers to detain those suspected of being infected with COVID-19. It was somewhat controversial, but not entirely unprecedented. And the previous day, historian Dermot Ferriter had joined Seanan Rourke in studio to discuss how Ireland had handled similar issues in the past, most notably the TB crisis in the 1940s, and the parallels with today.
We're using a military terminology at the moment, which is quite fitting, you know, because this is about mobilisation, it's about resistance, you know, and it is about declaring war on something, but also an acknowledgement that certain aspects of it are outside of the control. So it really is about trying to control what you can. There were huge controversies in the late 1940s about the idea of forcibly detaining people. You know, this is where we get great clashes between Catholic social theorists who believe that the private medical affairs of a family or community should remain that way, that the state has no role in them, and then those involved in framing health legislation seeking to extend the role of the state who are saying this is for the greater good.
But were those powers actually used?
They were used. Now, they didn't have to be used in a way that some feared, because, again, this was about trying to educate public and generate a degree of knowledge on the part of the public, that you've got to get rid of the stigma, for example, associated with TB in the late 1940s. But you've got to encourage people to stop spitting on the pavement, and you've got to make people appreciate how easily this can be spread. And people generally bought into this. I think one of the extraordinary achievements of Noel Browne, he was a very controversial and mercurial and difficult character, but one of the things that he managed to do was persuade people that this was about their will, about their control, about their community, about the greater good.
Historian Dermot Ferriter with Sean. And if further proof was needed about the extraordinary times in which we live, on Wednesday, Joe,
wash your hands,
Duffy, made this introduction.
Dr. Ciara Kelly, you all know Ciara, who was previously on Operation Transformation. She's now a very successful broadcaster on News Talk. Ciara, good afternoon.
I'm sorry, pardon, did you say News Talk? sworn enemies, JNLR grabbers, news talk as if the week hadn't been shocking enough. But it turned out Dr. Ciara Kelly had contracted COVID-19 and was in self-isolation.
It started weirdly, not with a cough, it started with a sore throat, but then it became a cough and it became a tightness and a pain in my chest on breathing. I had a lot of chest pain. Okay. Not like a harsh chest pain, but like I had a symptom I've never had. And that's why I thought this is new. This is something different. I was burning from the back of my throat and my nose. I was burning all the way down into the middle of my lungs. Okay. A horrible sensation, actually. And I went, I don't know this. I don't recognize this. I've never had this in my life. This is something weird and different. And I'm sick. Could this be corona? Mm-hmm. And yes, it is.
And how are you feeling right now?
I felt better, to be honest. I'm very fluey, and I'm kind of have a headache, and I'm kind of getting, you know, the sweats and the chills a little bit and those types of things. I have a cough and I have my chest is a bit tight, and I've had at different times over the weekend, certainly on Saturday, my breathing wasn't great. I was short of breath and I had a lot of burning in it when I was breathing and stuff. That's why I got the test, because I went, here, this isn't normal at all. So I feel like I have a bad dose, and I'm still on air. I'm broadcasting lunchtime live from the hot press of my house, which is where I'm sitting talking to you now. But in between those things, I go back to bed. So I'm in my pyjamas, Joe. We're chatting. Okay. We're chatting in the pyjamas.
Thank you.
Still on the air, putting it up to us. That was News Talk's Ciara Kelly with Joe. And you get well soon, Ciara. So normal radio rivalries can resume. And speaking of pyjamas, with so many of us working from home, when Sarah McInerney spoke to Irish Times technology journalist Ciara O'Brien, she asked this question.
This might sound like a silly question, but does it matter what you wear? I mean, you're in your pyjamas, you're not going anywhere, you've got all the shopping in. Do you just stay in your pyjamas because it's comfortable? Or from a psychological perspective, do you think it's important to get showered, get dressed? From a hygiene perspective, I suppose it's important to get showered, but get dressed into your work clothes, etc.
For the sake of your family, it is probably better to at least have a shower. Again, it depends on the person. I find personally that even changing out of pyjamas, it doesn't have to be like full on work. If you go to work in a suit, I'm not suggesting you sit at home in your suit. But I do find that actually getting into clothes helps you get into that mentality for work, as opposed to, you know, just slobbing around the house in my pyjamas. I've tried both approaches. Definitely getting dressed works for me.
The Irish Times not at full-on nudity just yet. But if you're going to get dressed, why not get dressed up? Perhaps we can broaden the definition of casual Friday. Why not ballgown Monday, taffeta Tuesday, fascinator Wednesday? I'm going to leave that with you. Back in a bit. Welcome back. Now, it's entirely possible that all this time at home with your nearest and dearest is going blissfully. A wonderful time to reconnect, maybe baking bread, cuddling kittens, or just sitting quietly in a circle, whittling sticks into love spoons, just like on Walton Mountain. Or it might be more reminiscent of an EastEnders Christmas special, slammed doors, silent treatment and glass smashing. Well, fractious family relations were the focus for the drama on One this week. Swept Under the Carpet was written by Sarah McKenna and was runner-up in the PJ O'Connor Radio Drama Awards last year. 10-year-old Jamie Clerken is the story's narrator.
We have a bird feeding table just outside our living room window. So on Saturday mornings, I get up really early to hear the dawn chorus. Although as soon as Aidan wakes up, he purposefully scares all the birds away. I make myself a really strong glass of blackcurrant squash, stronger than Mum ever lets me have it, and I watch them. That's when it happened. No! I spilt some. Mum's carpet couldn't have been more than a week old, and it was top of the range.
Soft luxurious, because Lord knows we have little enough luxury around here as it is. It cost me a small fortune.
And I had spilt blackcurrant on it, leaving a massive heart-shaped stain in front of the settee. I knew I was dead, but I had no idea what was going to happen next.
And a rubber vanish isn't going to fix this one.
They were very unhelpful. Anyway, they can't do anything about it. It's ruined. They won't replace it. They won't wash it. I don't want to have to resort to having to spend €3,000 on a new one, but...
€3,000, Fidelma? I didn't have the bleeding money for you to buy the carpet the first time around. You can forget about a replacement. I'm an engineer, love, not a millionaire.
Oh, that says it all, really.
What?
The state of our marriage.
Oh, come on, you're being ridiculous.
No, you are.
Ooh, because it's never really about the carpet stain, is it? That was the drama on One This Week, Swept Under the Carpet by Sarah McKenna. But on Thursday, Ray D'Arcy asked relationship counsellors Ray O'Neill and Alison O'Connor for some concrete advice as to how to stay sane if you're stuck at home. Here's Ray O'Neill.
To just always remember that everything that you do has impacts on other people.
Right.
If you're taking four extra packets of toilet paper, which for some reason seems to be the new paper currency in Ireland, that means there's going to be four less packs for other people in your community. If you're stuck in a house, if you're stuck in a situation and you're hogging the TV control, that has an impact. If you're drinking, that's going to have an impact on the atmosphere in the house. So again, that expression that we have in Ireland that I think needs to be used more often is Niniarka Kurlikela. There is no strength unless we all act together.
Still kind of want the remote though, but Alison O'Connor had this to say.
Find meaning in what we're doing. The social distancing, you know, we are really hoping is going to have an impact. And whilst you're being vigilant and proactive yourself at home, that is protecting you and your family and the people around you in the community so that the people at the forefront, the health workers, can do what needs to be done. I think that gives meaning to feeling like this is very difficult, yes, you know, when the end coming, and surrendering to a degree that we're being asked to sit on our couches, you know, we're being asked to stay at home. But the people who are out there at the coalface working at this tirelessly, we need to see that we are playing our part. So I think there's a good sense of, like Ray saying, we're all in this together. We all have a part to play. Putting a sense of meaning on this time will help you manage it, you know, well, and just be patient with each other. Be more patient than you would be normally.
Deep breath in and out. That was Alison O'Connor with Ray D'Arcy. You could also try a bit of this.
I look in the mirror and you know what my mirror says every time?
Okay.
It goes, wow.
That, gentle listener, is the voice of fitness coach Derek Evans, or Mr. Motivator. And he spoke to Joe...
Wash your hands.
...Duffy on Monday, and he's all about self-love. And he has a different take on what's happening in the world at the moment.
You got to love yourself first. And the other way to look at what's going on at the moment, right? Mm. Mother Nature needed a break. Mother Nature for years have had us polluting it, too many cars, using up all the resources, and now Mother Nature is taking a break. And it's also saying to you to take a break. So all those things that you used to say, well, I'll do it later, mm-hmm, you can now do it now. All those times you said to friends, I'll call you later, you can call them now. All those times you say, I'm going to, when I get home, do that, you can do it now. So look positively at things that you can do. And remember, around the home, take out bottles of water, right? Take up cans of baked beans, push it out in front of you, do big arm circles, right? March on the spot, dance like there's no tomorrow, and you'll feel good.
The delightfully named Mr. Motivator with Joe on Monday. And on Wednesday, Ray D'Arcy spoke to homelessness campaigner Father Peter McFerry, who put our current crisis in a broader framework.
And everybody's saying, we're in this together. We can only tackle this as a community united. I suppose we've been saying that about the homelessness crisis for a long time.
And well, we have, but we haven't done anything about it. This is going to force us. This virus is shining a bright light on the injustices and inequalities in our society, our failure to address the housing and homeless problem, our failure to address the hospital crisis, our failure to address the drug crisis, and the mental health problems. They are the people who are going to be most impacted and find it most difficult to self-isolate. So it's, we have got to pull together. This is going to fundamentally change attitudes and indeed our whole culture and values. We are operating as a nation, we are operating on the basis that the objective is to maximize growth and maximize wealth. This virus is totally undercutting that and helping, showing us that, look, we are not in control. We're not even in control of the economy. And we have got to, it's going to force us to live more simply. It's going to push us into a recession. and it's going to challenge the very basis of our culture. We live in a culture where individualism has been elevated over the common good. It's all about me and getting ahead and maximizing my my income. In a virus like this, nobody is safe unless the most vulnerable person is safe. Our wealth and our assets and our postal address do not protect us from this virus. We either all try and help one another, we ought to try and sort out the inequalities in our society, or we all suffer. That's the lesson from this virus. And it's also the lesson that climate change is about to bring. This is a test run for climate change. Unless we all pull together and unless we all recognise the problem and address the problem together, climate change is going to overwhelm us the same way that this virus will overwhelm us if we don't pull together.
Father Peter McVerry with Ray Darcy. All week long, Ryan Tuberty has been telling stories of communities coming together on village greens, streets and online to sing, dance and exercise, or just connect. Something he likes to call the domino of decency.
You may have seen also the every night at 8 o'clock, the people of Spain are coming onto their balconies and opening windows. And what they do is they open their windows and they're thinking of the healthcare staff and they're thinking of all the emergency staff. So what they do is at 8 o'clock, they come to the windows to say thank you. Isn't the human spirit something? You know, whether it's music or singing or just simply this domino of decency. One window opens, another window opens, another window opens, and all the balconies start filling with people applauding to say thank you. I think that's another something very, very beautiful to point out to you this morning.
Well, that's actually really lovely. And later in the week, Ryan read out this text from Kelly's Treehouse.
Going outdoors is not cancelled. Listening to music is not cancelled. Quality time with our families is not cancelled. Reading a book is not cancelled. Sharing with friends is not cancelled. Singing out loud is not cancelled. Laughing has not been cancelled. Sharing hope with others has not been cancelled. Let us embrace what we have.
And the remote control. Sorry, just messing. But that thread of hope and resilience was echoed on Sunday Miscellany when John Toll brought us a piece called Dochas.
Right throughout our history, our poets have taken time to offer hope. Patrick Kavanagh, in one of my favourite poems, The Long Garden, describes a wide-eyed, childish hope. It was the garden of the golden apples, and when the Carrick train went by, we knew that we could never die till something happened, like wishing for a fruit that never grew. Seamus Heaney was thinking more of political change when he wished, once in a lifetime, that hope and history would rhyme. Even Yeats, when he just gets up to go to Innisfree and look after his 9 bean rows, is hoping for a quiet, peaceful life. And Derek Mahon's relentless positivity would do you the power of good. The sun rises in spite of everything, and the far cities are beautiful and bright. I lie here in a riot of sunlight, watching the day break and the clouds flying. Everything is going to be all right.
Well, that is it from this week's playback. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's still the weekend, so enjoy yourself and happy Mother's Day.
Sometimes I feel like throwing my hands up in the Sometimes I feel